KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A new exhibit called Dreams Deferred is opening at the Oregon Historical Society, and it's designed to showcase the voices of undocumented immigrants from Mexico and Central America who came to our country as kids or young adults. Joining us right now are Sankar Rahman with the Immigrant Story Nonprofit and Miguel Rodriguez, who came to this country with his family as an undocumented immigrant and has an amazing story to tell. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today. We really appreciate you being here. First of all, Sankar, tell us about this new exhibit and why it's important.
We are starting tomorrow. It's going to be until April 12th in Oregon Historical Society. And it's about stories of six Oregonians and who came here when they are very young. And all of them are undocumented. And the youngest one was a student who just graduated from high school. Her name is Jessica. And one of the other ones we have portrayed is a Multnomah County judge. And we have a gamut of people, all of them Oregonians, and contributing to society in variety of ways. And, if you really look at it, there are two things I want to point out. In 2020 election year, and I'm expecting the rhetoric is going to be the same thing as 2016. The 2016 election started with our president starting to say these immigrants are rapists and murderers, especially pointed towards the immigrants coming from the South. And, right now there is also the Supreme Court is considering the DACA case, and decisions would be made available anytime soon. We are talking about thousands of Oregonians whose life is determined by these decisions that will determine the fate of these Oregonians. So what we have in the exhibition is six different stories of six different people, all walks of life. And we collaborate with Jim Lomason, who is a very renowned local photographer, who does What We Carried project, used to ask the question to the refugees from Iraq and Syria, and what was the one object they carried with them. And he extends that project to the immigrants from Mexico and Central America and ask the question, what is the one object they carried with them when they crossed the border? And so when you think about this exhibition, there's a portrait and there's a personal narrative and the objects that carried with them. In that object, the participants write in their own writing, handwriting, about their own story. So with all the combination of their personal narratives and the objects they carried, behind all these speeches about, aliens, illegal immigrants, undocumented, and all those things, you get to know this personal person. And this person is real. They are Oregonians. They have a real story. And underneath it all, they have a personal story to talk about. That's what this is important. Mm-hmm.
And, well, Miguel, you're one of the six that this is focusing on. What are people going to learn about you from this exhibit?
So I think out of all the six folks that are featured here, my story is a little bit different just because I actually am a permanent resident now. And that was primarily because of some other unfortunate circumstances through the Violence Against Women's Act. Mm-hmm. But I was still undocumented. But one of the biggest pieces that from my story that folks will get is that we are here to stay. And then on top of that, there are significant contributions that we give to our community, whether that's through work, whether that's through community service, that, we're not that narrative, that xenophobia of that we're rapists, that we're murderers, that we come to this country with the idea of taking advantage of all the resources that the United States has, that's a false narrative. And so from my story, you'll see the work that I'm doing to give back to the community that I live in and that I want to see prosper.
Yeah, and you're involved with teaching, right?
Correct. So I'm actually a former mentor at Madison High School, and then I worked also like at Reed College. So I have a lot of educational experience at stuff, but currently I'm at OMSI doing talent development as well as inclusion work. So I'm multifaceted in that way. So.
That's great. While I was looking at your bio, and it's amazing to think about the story of what you and your family had to overcome. Mm-hmm. It's starting out with there was some domestic violence, I believe, that
correct
and that precipitated your move to here to America. Tell us what happened.
So there's a little bit caveat there. It was mainly because my sister needed medical attention that the United States could provide better than Mexico, and originally we were going to stay here for maybe a year or so, and then my mom realized that her children could have a better future here in the United States. And then at some point, regarding domestic violence, that's when later on in my life, that's how I gained permanent residency. But I think the major factor was that my mother saw that her children could have a better future. It wasn't originally our idea to stay. It was just to provide my sister with medical attention that she needed.
So. Yeah. So then the next part of the story is you were in California and you mm-hmm. ended up coming to Oregon. How did that happen?
Yeah. So due to, once again, being undocumented, the main breadwinner of our family was my stepfather, and he was having difficulty finding work. And then on top of that, there was another, his mother had cancer, and we made the decision as a family that it made sense to first provide support to his mother, but then also he needed to find employment and become more steady. So it was kind of culture shock, but we came to Oregon, Southern Oregon in particular first, and it was a very difficult time just because I'm from LA and mm-hmm. a big city, and then to come to a place that was very rural and predominantly white, for example, that was another barrier in itself.
That was Roseburg.
Yeah, correct, Roseburg.
Okay.
Yeah.
And while you were there, what was it like to live life as an undocumented person in that society?
Yeah, so I think throughout my entire life, but especially in Roseburg, I was always very conscious about who I shared my status with. I was very private, and it was really like making sure that I could trust the people that I shared this information with. And now that I do have permanent residency, I'm more vocal about it, case in point why I'm here. But it was incredibly difficult because a lot of the privileges that folks take for granted, I didn't have access to. So I would see my friends, you know, being 16, 17 and getting ready to like drive vehicles, you know, go on these fun excursions, apply to schools very easily. While for myself, I was always like thinking, how am I going to take the next step if I need to disclose my status and I wasn't eligible for financial aid, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sankar, you have been working with, I consider you kind of an immigrant specialist or expert in our community because you've been gathering all these stories from so many different immigrants. Why did you decide to do this Dreams Deferred exhibit? Why was it important to focus specifically on people like Miguel?
Yeah, I think for what he was mentioning, a lot of these folks who are undocumented remain voiceless, and they are afraid to speak about themselves or about the issues they are having in our community. And they don't talk necessarily because of they don't want to talk, but they are really afraid what might happen, even though Portland is very progressive, even with all those things. So what we are trying to do is to shine light on those issues and to try to bring those stories in front of what is happening, and so that you could hear them talk about it and what happened within them. So a lot of us, you know, really geared towards it. We started documenting undocumented stories of undocumented immigrants for about 2.5-3 years now. So we have been doing this. We have about 9, 10, 12 stories, starting from Carlinhos, Oregon, to maybe Gresham, mm-hmm. you know, mainly Portland Metro, the larger Portland Metro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many people, do you have any idea how many people these issues affect in our community?
My number indicates it's about 10 to 14,000 in Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's definitely a more significant population in California, New York, Texas, just because those are more of the metropolitan area. But as far as I know, and don't quote me on this, but I believe the number used to be, I think, 10 million people in the United States. And those mm-hmm. are just folks that through data, people have found out that, you know, they're undocumented, but it's estimated it's probably a little bit more just because of the nature of privacy and secrecy in terms of not wanting to share status. Mm-hmm. But that's for the United States.
I just want to add, though, there are two categories, the undocumented immigrants. Unofficially, there are, you know, around 11 to 14 million people in United States. And the DACA, specifically, those, in the young students who are given the ability to register their name and go to college, the DACA, that is around 700,000 people in this country now. Mm-hmm. And 14,000, when I said 14,000, those are all 14,000 DACA recipients in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge number. And these are young people who have never really known any other country, at least not very well, because most of them came here when they were very young.
Yes. Yeah. For myself, my family immigrated here when I was four. Mm-hmm. My sister was eight, and my mother was... Oh, wow. She was my age. She was like 24, 25. And wow. So I'm 26 now. But, it runs a variety of ages. Like some folks came here when they were like 12, 13. So they have that experience of remembering their native country. For myself, kind of to your point, I have no recollection of Mexico. I have no, just through the stories that my mother and my family tells me, but I have no recollection of my history from my native country. So,
yeah, you know, this is a census year also coming up. And one of the fears among a lot of people is that folks are not going to feel like they can safely respond to the census if they're undocumented. Do you think that is warranted, that really is an existing fear that's out there?
I would say it's legitimate because... Yeah. With DACA, for example, there's an application process, and that information is stored in USCIS. And so that idea of the census also being another way that the government is tracking that data and can, if an administration were to be more crafty, could identify where these folks live and target them, that's a legitimate fear. And I would say that for myself, that was one of the biggest things is like, what information am I providing the government because they might be able to use it against me. And in particular, you know, now that I hold this privilege of being a permanent resident, that fear is partially removed, but is still pressing because as we've seen in some of the news, like there are folks who are still either permanent residents or US citizens, and they are still being targeted. So imagine that being an additional barrier, an additional factor that's affecting people. It's a legitimate fear.
Mm-hmm. And then states could lose out. Like, for example, in Oregon, they're talking about the possibility of adding an extra member of Congress based on the population, if everybody is really counted. But if some folks are afraid to be counted, then that could hurt the state in other ways, too. And not just the undocumented folks, but all of us who live here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, you know, when you did go through the process to, quote, become legal, what was that like?
Yeah. So because of the circumstances, it was a lot of secrecy in regards to, it was my stepfather who, you know, domestic violence. And it was very like, a lot of money that we had to save up, a lot of meetings with lawyers and stuff like that. Shout out to Catholic Charities. They really helped us out. I really appreciate them. And it was a long journey. And, you know, once again, it's a very unique situation because there are other folks who don't have a path to citizenship or permanent residency. But because of my situation, for better or worse, now I hold this privilege. But I would say that even though it was an incredibly difficult process, I'm glad that now I have it because now I can empower other people to advocate for themselves because it would be a waste to not use this privilege that I now have to better serve my community and empower others. But it was incredibly difficult to go through that process.
Mm-hmm. As far as the DREAM Act and what's going on with that this year, what would your message be to our community about how important that is? What is decided?
I think one of the things we need to consider more heavily is this idea of the DREAMers focuses on younger people. There are also countless people that are older that don't fit into that category. There are parents, like my mother is also a permanent resident now, but like we have all these older folks that aren't technically eligible for DACA or eligible to become residents. So we also need to take into consideration that it's not just about the quote unquote good immigrants. It's also the folks who don't, who are never going to have this chance because of this idea that you need to fit America's standard of what a good immigrant is, because that's a narrative that keeps getting pushed. And I understand that the youth, the folks who are my age, my category, there's a lot of our parents brought us for the idea of having a better future, but all the sacrifices that our families had to make for us to have these opportunities, it would be messed up not to also include them as part of a comprehensive DREAM Act. The DREAM Act needs to include those other folks that aren't part of that package, for lack of better terms.
Mm-hmm. In terms of what's going on politically, do you see any movement in that direction right now, or is not really?
No, I don't. Yeah. And that's something that we need to be more vocal about. We need to continue to, politics is one avenue, but there are other ways that we can mobilize and empower our community to really think more critically about how we can better support our community. So politics is one big overarching way that we can do that. But systematically, this is a system of oppression. So what are the ways that we can do work in the community that doesn't necessarily have to rely on the national scope? There's stuff we can do in our communities to help.
Okay, so. And we're talking with Miguel and Sankar about this exhibit that's opening up called the Dreams Deferred exhibit at the Oregon Historical Society. It's going to run from January 10th through April the 12th. And tell us a little bit more about how you came to select these six people that you're focusing on for this exhibit.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the stories of the six people, of course, all the stories are very interesting in itself, and they provide us really a deep insight into the Oregonians of undocumented immigrants. But the six stories is particularly interesting to us is because they represent a wide variety, age and representation, as well as the countries. We cover Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, and Mexico. So we needed to cover the wide range of folks, and that's another reason. And the kind of work they do, to cover the all aspects of our community.
Yeah, and their education and what they're contributing to the community.
Yes.
Do you think that people are aware of that?
Yes, and there are social workers. There are judges, like I mentioned, is an educator, and there is a student. There is an activist who has become a professional therapist. So we see all acts of life, represented in this six people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that Oregon is getting more progressive in terms of, I also did an interview recently about the hate crime mm-hmm. laws and how there are still a lot of attacks on people in the Muslim community, Jewish community, African Americans,
yeah,
and
right.
so forth. Do you think that we still have a long ways to go as a culture?
Yes. I think as immigrants of color, the hate speech you come across often is go home, irrespective of whether they are citizens or, even Oregonians. If they happen to perceive you as an immigrant of color, then the hate speech often happens. In Portland, maybe we are progressive, but if you just go slightly above, outside of Portland, mm-hmm. you start to hear it very often. And I think we are progressive. We have done come a long ways, but I think there is still a lot of room to really, talk about ways of elevating the presence of immigrants and immigrants of color and their contributions, and so that we can make this community more inclusive, that we are all in it together kind of feeling.
Yeah, I saw you nodding over
yeah.
there. Miguel, you have something you want to add about this?
Like I mentioned earlier, I lived in Roseburg. Mm-hmm. And so if you go anywhere outside of Portland, it's predominantly red. And not to just say that the Republican Party, for example, is like this entire beacon of like destruction, but there's a lot of folks outside of Portland who have this ideology of being xenophobic, racist. And when I was in Southern Oregon, you could definitely tell. I think the folks that I, you know, interacted with in terms of my high school and college career down there, it wasn't as evident, but that's because those folks were striving to become more educated and trying to understand different cultures. But then more of the folks who maybe were on the fringe or were more like retirees or folks that, you know, were like blue collar workers and stuff like that. I noticed that there was a lot of like very racist ideology, and having to navigate that as a brown person in a small town was incredibly difficult. And I know that that extends, we think of Portland as this kind of like, for lack of better terms, like a mecca of progressiveness. But if you go outside, you start noticing it. And I would say even in Portland, there are still pockets. It's just more, it's more hidden, the racism. It's more about like microaggressions and stuff like that. But there's still racism no matter where you go. It's just outside of Portland, you start to see more of those ripples.
Were there incidences where you felt actually threatened?
Yes.
Well, there were.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Roseburg, it wasn't... I would say that folks were more direct. They were more blatant about their racism. They would say, like Sankar mentioned, go back to your country. I had incidents where people would be like, why are you here? You spick, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Very derogatory terms. But it was never something that I was like, for self-preservation, I was like, this is just temporary. I know who I am and I know what I stand for. And even though these people see me in this different light, I'm not going to let that get to me because I know who I am and I know what I stand for. Mm-hmm. That's something that they need to work on. And so those incidents where I felt threatened, it hurt at the moment. And there's a lot of trauma associated with that. But I think it made me a stronger person because I knew that I could persevere and that I could prove them wrong, that I could show them, I could show people that that is not the color of my skin and where I'm from is not going to define who I am. I get to define that. I get to say and I get to show people who I am through my actions instead of the color of my skin.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's one of the reasons you chose to be part of this exhibit.
Correct. Yeah. Because for the longest time, my voice was silenced. And now that I hold this privilege, it would be a shame once again not to exercise this privilege that I have to speak out about those experiences for the folks who maybe don't feel as comfortable talking about this compared to me.
Mm-hmm. Sankar, you had witnessed and experienced some stuff along these lines yourself, and that's why you started the immigrant story. Could you recap that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the main reason why I started this one was on February 22nd of 2017, there was an Indian guy shot, you know, dead in Kansas. And that brought back memories of me in a bar. He was shot in a bar in Kansas. And that brought back memories of me being assaulted. You know, not with a gun, but, you know, I took a hit in a bar a long time ago. So, you know, I thought, you know, things like that happening, you know, it could happen to anybody. So we need to bring attention to this by telling the stories. You know, we don't often talk about violence and stuff, but we talk about, you know, stories of immigrants of color, refugees and asylees and DACA recipients and undocumented folks. But, you know, that's what it started. But I just want to say that, you know, the stories, you know, we hear all kinds of stories, right? And, you know, we are just now going through the stories of, you know, we have an exhibition in Beaverton Library that talks about six hijabi-wearing women that was aftermath of Max event. Mm-hmm. That case is going on now in our one, you know,
That trial is coming up.
Right, that trial is coming up. Mm-hmm. And that exhibition, Who We Are, along with Jim Lomas, and also it is actually going on in the Beaverton Library. And this week we are going to publish a story about Rwandan genocide survivor. Wow. His name is Emmanuel, and he talks about his racial incident in Max, of all the places. And that's how the story starts. You know, that will come out on Friday, which is tomorrow. So these kind of things, you know, we have hijab, being pulled out, in PSU, mm-hmm. students, young mm-hmm. girls, happens.
Mm-hmm. Is there in particular, we've heard a little bit about Miguel's story, but is there another one of the six that you want to maybe talk about, and the six that you're focusing on this exhibit?
Yeah, I think, all of these stories are interesting. Some of uh-huh. the stories dwell into how they cross the border. Mm-hmm. And some of the stories talk about how they became a judge. And another story talks about how it was so important, coming to America as a student, and then going into a very competitive high school, Sunset High School, and become a high school student. Mm-hmm. And without knowing the language, trying to navigate high school as a foreigner, not knowing the language, working like multiple jobs and establishing their own home without anybody, and finally graduating and going to college. And these are all the stories I think everybody should listen to. And I think, there is an activist, who was responsible for starting the DACA Center at PCC. Her name is Liliana Luna. Her image mm-hmm. is here. Mm-hmm. And, and then we have a story about, Bernal, who is, a social service worker, works with, undocumented kids. So we have, all these stories, were very interesting in itself. And I really encourage people to come down there and spend some time, look at the picture and read the stories, and then look at the objects they brought and what they wrote about that object and why it is important to them. And I think by doing this, you really get to know beyond this, divisive rhetoric we often hear. Mm-hmm. about this, immigrants today.
Mm-hmm. Miguel, why should people come out to see this exhibit? Why do you think it's so important?
Yeah, I think to the points that Sankar definitely shared, but I think I would just want to reiterate the fact that a lot of us have been silenced for so long, and I definitely want to acknowledge Liliana's contributions in terms of the Dreamer Center at PCC Rock Creek. Mm-hmm. That is something that the fact that she took such an initiative and stuck through it to create it speaks to the power that we have as individuals to really show that we are capable of doing great things if we are given the chance and opportunity. And then on top of that, hopefully this inspires not just folks to understand the complexities of immigration, migration, capitalism, et cetera, but also that the amount of people who maybe get empowered by sharing these stories can have a ripple effect, because I would love to see more folks who are undocumented in DACA be more at the forefront of sharing their stories. But I understand, once again, that's a risk. And so hopefully this empowers people to be like, if they can do it, we can do it. And we can do it together as a community, because we've been silenced for too long.
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty inspiring, Sankar. Right?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, Dreams Deferred, it's an exhibit that's going to run from January the 10th through April the 12th of this year at the Oregon Historical Society. And that's located at 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Thank you so very much to Sankar Rahman with The Immigrant Story. And Jim Lamassin was supposed to be with us. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it today. And Miguel Rodriguez for sharing your story with us here on KBOO News In Depth.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.